Good morning, and thanks for joining us for today's edition of the Horseman's Corner. I'm Howard Hale, host of the program. With me, co-host Marty Martin. Our guest today is Charlie Hill, and why don't you start this out with Charlie, will you?
Charlie, where do you call home right now?
Well, we live at Queen Creek, Arizona, and we've been here now about 10 or 11 years, and we just fool with these horses.
Charlie, how long you been doing this?
Well, I've been doing nothing but horses all my life. I started with horses when I was about 5 years old, and I started shoeing horses when I was about 20. And I met Ray Hunt in about 1982, and I've been just doing nothing but horses my whole life.
And kind of fun to work with, aren't they?
Yeah, they are fun to work with, and they're... They reveal a lot to you about yourself and what you have to do to improve yourself.
You know, Marty, you went to one of Charlie's clinics down at Black Forest area, I think. And after being in that clinic, what are some of the things that you'd like to talk to Charlie about?
I would like for Charlie to reflect on the big brown horse or bay horse, particularly there at the end where you worked it along the fence.
Yeah, I remember well.
Would you talk about that? That was very, very reflective, I thought.
Marty's referring to, in our colt class, we started, I think it was four colts, and we had a big warm blood horse in there that was trying to take over when I had them turned loose together. And I like turning the horses loose together. There's a lot of education coming out of what it takes to work on the social skills that the horse has. And then once those social skills are kind of take shape and take order, a lot of the problems that you might have in your human relationship with the horses are kind of taken care of. And so I don't a lot of times do as much preparation before I take that opportunity to turn those horses out and run them together. And this horse was pretty insistent that he was going to control the whole herd and the whole dynamic. And I had to work with him for quite a long time. And in that time, as a matter of fact, I've got a boy named Chance Stone that works for me back here in Arizona. And I visited with him about this because we're going to put a cattle class on at Lou Ann Goodyear's. And I really don't work money cattle anymore. I used to work a lot of cattle. But in working these horses loose, there were several things that came up. And there was one of the participants there was watching me as I had to work this horse in and out around the other horses, and they were wondering how it was that those other horses weren't kicking at me and how I could negotiate through there and keeping my focus on the big brown horse, as Marty referred to it. And as I looked at that, the gal that had asked, she was quite a high-level shooter in the amount of shooting deals, and I said, well, how do you keep from running into your targets? You know, it's kind of the same, and yet it is. You have to have a horse that rates, and my horse had to rate, and I'd find that opportunity when I could move that other horse off, and I could scoot through there before he had a chance to kick me, and different things like that. So I think that was a little bit interesting in itself. But then, as that horse started to turn loose and of being in control and starting to let me be in control a little bit, it's a lot like the cow. I was always, if I'm working on the mind and getting that horse to turn loose to me, I always turn it away from me. And yet in the round pen, you're always looking to get the horse to turn loose and quit trying to escape you. But when they're trying to go past you and take control of another situation, then you want to turn them away. And so that's the things I was doing. And in that process, it took a while, and my horse got to fading a little bit, giving him more ground, which I appreciate my horse fading, but that horse felt it as a weakness. And so I pointed out to folks how I had to slow down my horse's outside foot and then make him be a little stronger on his inside front foot so he could push a little straighter on that horse and get him to turn at the exact moment when I wanted him to. And when that happened, the brown horse changed. When he understood that I could hold that line and get control of him, then that brown horse changed, and I marched him out And as I approached him, I'd say, I'm going to move a certain foot, and that foot would move, and I'd say another foot, and that foot would move, and another one, and that one, and that carried on, and it was really kind of even a little emotional for me to have that kind of control over that horse from my horse's back. And Roger, Kyle, he asked me later about me being able to get that result, and I said, well, when my horse got right on, then it was easy to control that horse. And Roger realized then that it was me working on my horse and what I needed to change so I could better affect the horse I was working with. And that's really what we have to do with every horse we approach. You know, we look at what the other horse, we want to change the other horse, but in order to change the other horse, we have to change ourselves, or in this case, I had to change my horse and how he was approaching his job and his task. And if there's a learning element out of that, to me, it's the fact that yeah, it looks like we're working on this other horse, but we're really working with inside of ourselves, or in my case here, I was working with inside of my own horse, so that he would hold his position stronger and yet not more intimidating, just a firm hold of his position until the other horse could realize that he was not in control, that the other horse was in control. And I don't know if that's what Marty wanted as an answer for when he asked this question, but...
Well, yes, it was. But let me ask another question about that. When you were finally finished, you decided you were finished working that brown horse, and you rode up to the fence where Roger and I were standing, what happened to the brown horse? What did he do?
He followed us right on over there.
He followed you right on over there, like he was very hooked on.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it was, I thought that was extremely impressive. And I thought, well, I really hope everybody here saw that.
Yeah. I appreciate that, Marty. And I know that guys like you, they don't have any trouble seeing that, you know. And I appreciate the fact that you were able to recognize what that meant to that horse, you know, because it really meant so much to that horse to give up his dominance and his wanting to be. And that's the thing that most people don't understand about the horse is the horse doesn't really want to be the dominant leader. You know, they do it out of necessity to survive. And when they trust in the other leadership, then they really... submit to that other leadership.
Yeah, they feel good about it, don't they?
They do feel good about it. And, you know, I can't help, and I don't know on the interview here, but I can't help but relate that to our spiritual walk, and that once we are willing to give up that authority and that control, we feel better.
If I'm understanding you correctly, you're saying there are some instances where a horse may not really want to be a leader, but he becomes a leader kind of by default.
I watch that, and I don't know that I have all the answers to that. I watch when I turn horses to get different horses together, the dynamics change a lot. And a lot of times the horse, and we can look at it as the bully, not so much the leader. And there's a difference between the leader and the bully. And I think it's no different than people relationships, you know. Sometimes, and you hear it from different, you know, TV programs or this or that, where you know, that they'll call the guy that was the bully the coward. That he, you know, he really was the bully because he didn't know how to face the situation any different. And, you know, you see that from time to time, and I'm in agreement with that. I think that a lot of times this desire to lead comes out of frustration and insecurities, not from securities, because I think someone, I heard him call it the benevolent leader, you know, the quiet leader, the leader that stays back and has the better answers is the one that most of them are going to follow. And when you get that bravery and that sticking out and trying to dominate, a lot of times that's out of insecurity. And they really look for the stronger leader. And when they understand and can trust that stronger leader, then they're very well ready to submit to him. Now, as I watch it again in the open, and they do it, but they do it with us as trying to be their leader, as we try to learn to be the better leader for them, so that they always are willing to serve us and always willing to willingly serve us. And sometimes you'll see that willingness wane a little bit and not be so willing. And you see that in the pasture between themselves, no different than sibling rivalries and different things like that. There is a connection between all of that that, you know, that the psychiatrist and the psychologist and stuff study in the human being a lot. I think some of them have gone to using the horse to help the human in a lot of ways, too, in some of your equine-assisted therapy programs and everything. So I think that there's a lot to be offered from the horse to the human in that understanding, but I don't think any of us have all the answers.
Let's take a quick break, but we'll be back with more from Charlie Hill. Let's take a quick break, but Marty and I will be back with more from Charlie Hill in just a moment. You're listening to The Horseman's Corner. It's the Rafter Inventory Blowout at Brighton Feed and Saddlery, 370 North Main in Brighton, Colorado, on leg boots, ropes, home decor, bits, saddle pads, fly spray, and books. Up to 50% off, but the quantities are limited. New inventory is arriving from the fall markets. Then there's also a great selection of rawhide and snaffle bit gear, including Bozell's, Rommel Reins, and Horsehair McCarty Reins. Friday and Saturday, September 20th and 21st, is their great Neutrino horse feed sale, up to $4 a bag off. And don't forget October 17th for Brighton Feed and Saddlery's Ladies Night Out. Discounts, games, and live auction for cancer awareness. That's BrightonSaddlery.com, or you can reach them from anywhere by calling 800-237-0721, 800-237-0721, or BrightonSaddlery.com. That's Brighton Feed and Saddlery, 370 North Main in Brighton, Colorado, a great place to shop for anything that involves the horse.